Hey, listeners, are you getting inspired to dive deeper into your learning of EFFT? If so, head on over to Catherine's website to check out her list of upcoming trainings. Some trainings are focused on combining EFFT with young kids and EFFT play therapy. So head on over to her website and we hope to see you in the future. Check it out at katherinedebruin.com, katherinedebruin.com, and we hope to see you in the future.
Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Family Express. Today, we have the honor of having Dennis Eames on our program. Dennis is a marriage and family therapist working in the Seattle area, and he's also an EFT supervisor in all the different models. Dennis is going to chat with us a little bit today about his work with children and teenagers, and particularly how to work past the block of what to do when a child doesn't seem to understand or doesn't know how to express to you what's going on under their reactivity. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you on the show.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about your work and learning with EFFT and your area of passion.
Well, I started out working with kids and families 25 plus years ago in grad school. And there wasn't a model that really kind of clicked with me for working with families. I tried to do this and that, and then it kind of like ended up kind of mostly working with kids and teens and bringing their parents in here and there, but wasn't really kind of satisfied with any of it until someone suggested, hey, you should talk to Katherine DeBruin. And that conversation led to joining, I think it was your very first EFFT with children train that you did.
My goodness, that takes us all the way back. Yeah. I remember your excitement and your passion, but like, what was it that you were missing or what did you find with the EFFT model, do you think?
I think a lot of what I found was how to make sense of these complex patterns happening between parents and kids. Parents love their kids and they're trying to be good parents and care for their kids, protect them, nurture them. And so often it just falls flat. I heard Jim use the term, I think it was a benevolent dismissal or something like that recently, of like, we're dismissing our kids' experience left and right, but we're doing it in an attempt to care for them, of like, oh, don't be scared. The lightning can't hurt you inside the house. And things like that. But EFFT provided this lens to kind of understand those patterns, not just what's happening with the kid that I think I'd been so focused on, trying to kind of help the kid become vulnerable and kind of talk to the parents about what they needed without being able to recognize all of the reasons that made sense that the parent wasn't ready for that, wasn't able to kind of be responsive to that. And totally missing the parental openness, responsiveness kind of piece that needed to happen first.
Yeah. Like children start out in the world super vulnerable and open. Mm-hmm. And then at some point they learn all these other behaviors. They learn mm-hmm. to submerge everything or to be super reactive or to just act up mm-hmm. certain ways, and then those become really rigid patterns. And then they come into treatment with us, and we start trying to clear out all the blockages. and get the kiddo back to being vulnerable again, or understanding what the conditions are that put those defenses and strategies in place. Mm-hmm. But yet sometimes when we're faced with a kid and we want to start taking these blocks out of the way, we run into, well, what's down there? How do we access that? Does the child even know what's down there? Or how can they put words into it? Or first of all, of course, it's got to be safe, right? To help the child to open up again. We need to have responsive, accessible parents. But what have you found to be helpful as you try to clear the deck, so to speak?
There's a couple of different kind of things that I've kind of use a fair amount within the EFFT, which is, I think, a little bit different than kind of what you were presenting, at least on the training I did with you.
Oh, yeah. I love yoga.
Of like using TheraPlay activities within EFFT, not kind of as standalone, but kind of within the family therapy, kind of EFFT family therapy session. And sometimes, like, just play can be a great way for those patterns to emerge in the therapy session right in front of you. Kind of an example kind of comes to mind of there's this TheraPlay activity where you kind of blow a cotton ball back and forth between the parents and kind of making it into a kind of competition of like, how many times can you blow it back and forth between each other, kind of without blowing it off the table. And this, the kid kind of, they blew it back and forth like five times, and then the kid blew it off the table, and then the dad gets frustrated, and they do it like two times, and the dad's like makes this kind of cutting comment, and the kid picks up the cotton ball and kind of puts it back on, and it's like, whoa, what just happened? Like, oh, nothing. The kid is like, no, nothing, just I'm fine. Like, well, your dad just said something that seemed like it kind of like something happened. Oh, no, I'm okay. He's just so used to minimizing his experience that kind of it took kind of reflecting it a number of times. Kind of like, oh, like you kind of look down and at the floor and your kind of body slumped. And when dad said these really kind of harsh words, like, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with you?
Like, yeah.
Can't you do this? Being able to kind of move from that, kind of maybe you get to see it as a kind of a tango move one of like the kind of present process in between, kind of back and forth. Like, you blew it off the table, dad made this comment, you try again, blow the table, dad makes a harsher comment, and then it's just like you just kind of like slump for a moment, and then you kind of like come back to it.
Yeah.
And then,
well, can I just jump in here, Dennis, and make sure I'm getting this? So we know in the EFT model we've got to make a dynamic come alive in the room, and so that we can, well, like, once the distress is ushered into the room, we're going to see the attachment strategies play out in front of us. And so with families, when they come in, it can be so tempting, I think, just because there's more people in the room, to say, well, tell me about a place you'll get stuck, or like, what's the problem in this family? What happens in this family? But no one really wants to out each other. Once the parents don't want to stigmatize the child. The kids don't know what you're talking about. They're not used to having something be so direct. And so everyone shuts down, and it can be like awkward even starting the conversation about like, what are you all here for? And so what you're suggesting in a tango move one is, let's just help this family. Let's get this family playing again. Okay. Playing. Like, what's not to love about that? That lowers everyone's defenses. We're building the alliance. We're titrating the emotionally in treatment. And when they all relax, inevitably they're going to get stuck, and their pattern's going to get created in front of us. And so you're using like TheraPlay games, which is a particular play therapy model that's done in dyads with a caregiver and a child. And you set them up to play various games in order to regulate the child, but also to see what the child's kind of window of tolerance is of dysregulating. And so that's really what you do often with families. Like you'll bring them in, start mm-hmm. them playing a game, and then like watch mm-hmm. them to see
yeah.
if distress gets ushered in and why.
Yeah, for that first family session with younger kids, we'll kind of have a space for like a big sheet of paper or something and just have them draw a picture of kind of different things that kind of throw out there for them to kind of do a picture of their family doing something. And sometimes you get four little independent pictures of it in each corner. They're all drawing their own thing. Sometimes like you start to see those dynamics of like these two people working together, mom and son working together, dad kind of jumping back and forth between one kid's drawing and the mom and the other kid's drawing. And you start to see these dynamics emerge. You kind of remembering kind of one particular case of that, of like just seeing the amount of anxiety mom had mm-hmm. and how that mom's anxiety kind of the whole family kind of organized around mom's anxiety to try and do things like to help kind of her kind of calm herself without even really being aware kind of they were doing it.
Yeah. So that's a nice example, like in a first family session is like set out a big game, whatever it is, draw something, mm-hmm. make a family shield, make a scene in the sand, whatever it is. Like there's mm-hmm. hundreds of ideas, right? And then you just give them space and time and you just start kind of tracking the dynamics mm-hmm. in the family. And then once you figure out like what's the most distressed unit, like in your other mm-hmm. example with the father and the child, then mm-hmm. you would put them in their own session. And then that's where you did mm-hmm. the cotton ball game.
Yeah.
Then look for the dynamic just specifically between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Okay, so those are some nice examples of move ones of the tango
mm-hmm.
using art to set the stage.
Yeah, yeah, art or a game.
Or a game, yeah, art.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go back to that cool example with, I think it is a son and a dad.
Yeah.
And what do you do at that point when you see the dynamic? So son kind of blows the thing off the table, like his concentration mm-hmm. is over. Too much intimacy, who knows what it is. He blows mm-hmm. it, dad gets irritated. And then the son kind of freezes and internalizes when you point it out. What do mm-hmm. you do at that point then? Like, where are you thinking you are on the tango? And what do you do when the child kind of buries or internalizes like that?
Mm-hmm. So I would kind of probably think about it in different ways, but I'm kind of thinking about it as still kind of in that tango move one of like, just kind of being able to kind of get in working with the son enough to like be able to kind of like help him identify. Yeah, that hurt when dad said that hurt.
Mm.
And I guess that could be kind of a move to kind of exploring like what happened with you when dad said those words and kind of the hurt that he experienced and kind of exploring that hurt in a move to, could you tell your dad about that hurt? And then his fear, like, no, like tell dad that what he said hurt me? No. And I think in that particular kind of case, like, I felt like, okay, like that's kind of as like, he's just gone from like not even being able to acknowledge that it hurt to kind of exploring this, shifting over to the dad of like, did you know he was hurt when you kind of make these kinds of comments? And then moving kind of maybe briefly back to move one where we're kind of go back and forth between what kind of happens between the two of them, but then into kind of move two with dad
mm-hmm.
of being able to recognize like, wow, he like, yeah, that it makes sense to him that those words hurt his kid. Kind of trying to find that caregiving motive underneath it of like, I want to motivate him. I'm trying to motivate him by criticizing him. And then at some point he's like, that's just crazy. That's how my dad motivated me. And it was horrible. And now I'm doing it to my son. And being able to kind of go into that that caregiving, like I want to motivate you, but I'm recognizing what I'm doing is I'm criticizing you, trying to get, I believe you can do better than this, but I criticize you in order to try and motivate you. And I can see now that that is really hurting you.
Yeah. So let me just follow you again with this, Dennis, because I love these moves you're making and I just want to make sure I've got it in order, right? So in the move one, the son and dad are playing this game and this dynamic happens, okay? You see it. It's there, but it's implicit. They don't slow down. They don't talk about it. You make it explicit. You track this dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that the sun sort of shuts down and you know that there's something underneath that and you want to explore mm-hmm. that more. And because you're in stage one with EFFT, you're looking to see, like, is there child vulnerability? Is it safe enough? If we get some child vulnerability, how does the parent respond? Is the parent then open, accessible, or mm-hmm. not? So we're going to really look for some child vulnerability, but it matters what we do with it. Because if we're in mm-hmm. stage one and the parents aren't accessible, responsive, and engaged, if we don't have that mm-hmm. openness, we're not going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Going to go deeper into it. We're not going to expose a child to more vulnerability in the midst of parents who aren't open. So, but you certainly can see if it's there, right? So as you mm-hmm. see the child get distressed, you lean in with the dynamic, he's able to put some words to that. Actually, it does hurt. It doesn't feel so good because mm-hmm. dad's important in his eyes. And so that's where either in move one or two, you're putting that word to the child's shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
Then you don't go deeper. Instead, you turn it over to the dad and then mm-hmm. you use that vulnerability to try to get the dad to be open. And so that you're talking about going back then and doing a move two with dad. And in stage mm-hmm. one, the move two with the parent is going to be a lot deeper, longer. And that's where we're really trying to find that parental openness, like see their caregiving intent. Empathize mm-hmm. and be with them so mm-hmm. that they can explore internally.
Yeah. And kind of both caregiving intent and the impact of kind of the misattuned kind of delivery of that intent. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. We're mm-hmm. in move two with the parent in stage one. We're finding the caregiving intent.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're helping them think about the impact of their misattuned response delivery. Mm-hmm. Delivery. I like how you said that. Yeah. Move two with the parent. That's a deep dive.
Mm-hmm. And then moving that into that move three of the parent being able to share from a kind of more attuned place of like, wow, I did not even recognize how my attempts to motivate you were hurting you.
Mm.
And it makes so much sense. Like, it makes so much sense that it hurt. And I was just totally missing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And both kind of taking that, sharing both the intent, but also recognizing the impact in that moment.
Yeah.
And processing that. And then, kind of what was it like sharing? What was it like receiving kid to hear your dad's kind of intent?
Yeah.
It's a desire to kind of motivate you to kind of help you like be more of kind of what he believes you can be, but also recognizing like, wow, what I said was really hurtful and I can see why it hurt.
Yeah.
And then kind of coming back around and then kind of this all happens like where the game has been paused. Well, but then going back to the kid,
where are the cotton balls? Like, and do we mm-hmm. need the art or the game or the cotton balls at this point? Because now we have a parent who's open, who's mm-hmm. just talking directly
to
the kiddo. But it might also depend on kiddo's response.
Listeners, check out our book for children of any age. It's called A Jumble of Thoughts and a Tangle of Feelings. It's on Amazon.com. If you know a child out there who is having a tough time, but unable to put that distress into words, this book is your guide to helping them figure out what is going on. Whether you're an educator, a therapist, or a parent, we really think this will be a helpful guide for you.
Yeah, right? Have you looked at it? Is he fidgeting? Is he uncomfortable?
Yeah. And kind of titrating kind of how the level of intensity and kind of how long a kid can kind of talk about something really deep before you kind of go back and kind of shift into something more comfortable. But kind of we basically made it around the tango and then we went back to the cane. Mm. I think this is kind of what is so cool about this particular example is like we went back to the game.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, how many times do you think you can blow back and forth between each other? I mean, the kid's like, my dad's like 50. The kid's like 5. Okay. And they kind of go like, well, it's like, but they were like, they couldn't do like 3 or 4 times back and forth before kind of going through this, through the tango. And at the end of the session, when we went back to the game, I think they were blowing it back and forth like 80, 90 times without it blowing it off the table. Just that corrective experience changed the kid's ability to engage with his dad and be confident and capable, being able to see his dad's belief in him instead of his dad's criticism.
There he is. That's incredible. Yeah. So that sort of makes me think about like, why did he blow it off after the first 5? And if that was just a place of like anxiety or pressure building up, then I think this corrective experience could help him relax and then do it for longer. If it was something neurological, like just getting distracted or bored, then that probably wouldn't change so much, but then dad would be more relaxed and start learning, hey, kiddo can't do it 50 times, but he can do it 5 times. And maybe we can help him get to 6 or, you know, support him in having longer concentration.
Yeah. And I don't know if this fits or not, but it would make sense within kind of attachment framework of like no response. Is more pain, no response is more painful than a negative response, kind of that. And so he was doing things that got a lot of intensity from his dad. It was painful, but it did get his dad to engage in response. And I wonder if, like, I don't know, but I wonder if that was part of it. Like I'm going to do what's going to get the most kind of engagement from you and
interesting
getting. Yeah. Corrected and criticized is kind of a way to get you to engage.
Oh, that's another lens, right? To look at that through. So I want to go back to this first time through the tango in stage 1. In move 1, you're with both of them. You find some kiddo vulnerability, maybe like a dip into move 2. Then you use that to go back and access the parent and you do a full tango on the parent side, on the dad's side. And as dad is enacting, and saying to his son, oh gosh, buddy, I didn't know that. That makes sense. Actually, my dad was like this with me too, or something like that. If kiddo's squirming or uncomfortable or something, I was thinking, like, let's come up with some ideas of how we could use the cotton ball exercise even right here, just to lighten it a little bit between them. Like, could you see something like, maybe the kid is playing with a cotton ball while dad's talking to him, or we could say, dad, well, gosh, dad, it sounds like you're realizing your criticism's hurting. Could you touch him with a cotton ball where you think it's hurt?
Yeah.
Use the cotton
ball. I like that idea.
If a soft response, or play that cotton ball game where, what about this? Dad, close your eyes. And then the therapy game where the therapist and the child hide the cotton ball somewhere on the kid. And then dad look for it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like as he's playing this game of hide and seek, he's also talking to the kiddo about how he didn't realize that there were some hidden feelings inside around
her. Yeah.
And I want to
love that.
Then we look for that cotton. Let's pretend the cotton ball's a hurt. What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, I love it. because it becomes both a kind of an activity, but also a metaphor and an image of what's happening.
Yeah. Okay, so then. Yeah, okay, so then we finish the move four. Dad tells the kiddo, you know, we see how kid responds. We do a move five, we summarize it. And then, like you said, we go back to playing the cotton ball game and then see what it's like now and see how they respond to each other. And then if we have an open dad now, like dad sees his son, he's attuned, he understands him. Then what would you do in terms of the tango now on the child side? Because if we're in stage two, for instance, which is where we really want to actually go and invite child ability with a different intention, right?
Yeah. After the dad was able to kind of consistently be open and attuned, then kind of going back to the child hurt. And I don't recall doing that with a game. I think we did it with some art, and we did the kid and I together, we did some art about his hurt, and then kind of dad came in after that, and once the kid was ready to share that with his dad, and then using the art as a way to share his hurt and his experience with his dad, and to start kind of opening that.
You're like, yeah, one doesn't have to stick to the same game, right? It's not really about, it's about helping the child find a way to open up without necessarily having to use like words and understanding. You remind me, Dennis, of a kid that I worked with many years ago, and we discovered that she was hurt inside and she had quite an injury. And she wanted to study medicine one day. She loved the human body. And we actually made a hurt. We made like out of Play-Doh. We made like an arm. And then we made like a splinter, like a cut in it. And we put a stitch. And then we made this whole little design. Because I'd said to them, you know, that if the hurt stays inside, then it can get infected and it oozes and it's sort of, ow, ow. And then the parent doesn't know why these reactions are coming. But we've got to get the splinter out, and we get the splinter out by getting it out and talking about it, identifying it, you know. We've identified a splinter in there. And then the mom came and she did like this little surgery and took the splinter out of the wound. It was so sweet. She actually took it home, and she actually she didn't go into medicine. She went into child psychology. It was pretty fun. What are some ways you've done move twos using art or games with a child?
Similar to kind of what we're just talking about with that boy, but I've done this, I think, more with teens, where getting them to be able to talk about their experience can be kind of quite challenging. Like, what's that like? Oh, I don't know. And then, so just kind of having them think about kind of the experience, and then draw what they feel in some way. Sometimes that kind of ends up being kind of representational drawing. Sometimes it's more kind of abstract and kind of colors. And then just kind of being able to kind of feel that and draw it. And then being able to share that drawing with the parent. Of like, this is my experience. It's kind of this red is just all of this anger that I don't know what to do with.
And right.
That's kind of like kind of exploding kind of out of me. That there's this kind of blue is the all of the kind of the sadness and disappointment. Like, I'm never going to have a good relationship with you.
So you could do that. Depending on the child's response, you could do that like pretty open, or you could do it super structured if the kid needs more scaffolding. But you could literally do that heart exercise where you draw the heart, and then you have to buy different colors, reds, anger, blue, sad, yellows, happy, and then say, color your heart based on the feeling side, right? Something like that. Or you're saying you could do it like super abstract, just like, let's put some paint colors into some paper and fold it and then open it up and then see what we've created and then kind of like chat and try to find some meat in that in a neo-Yemenist way.
And sometimes I've done this with kind of parent and child both in the room. Sometimes I'm doing this with just the child in the room and then we share with the parent later.
Yeah.
Depending on, I think that kind of largely kind of is dictated on the child or teen's level of safety of like how much safety they have with the parent to share their experience. Cause sometimes, sometimes that safety isn't there, even just to kind of be able to get to like the impact and the hurt and what kind of what the, of the misattunement, and parental blocks are. And we have to kind of sometimes do that apart from the parent. I think ideally we do it with the parent there, but sometimes it's like I've had some teams that are like, hell no, I'm not doing that. And I'm not going to, don't want them here. But then kind of as we explore it and like, okay, what would it be like to share this with your mom or your dad? Or your aunt?
Yeah, that's got me thinking now. You're making me think, because on the one hand, if the child, if we can't get into that vulnerability with a child, with the parents in the room, like part of me would be wondering, well, are the parents really open? And the parents could be open and the child could still just have a really hard time going there or putting words to what's happening. So that could be a time to go do some playtime with the kiddo alone and sort of help them open up and discover themselves, even in a client-centered kind of way or centre kind of way. And sometimes the parents are not open, but the child still needs some support on the side. And so we might start doing some child sessions just to support the child emotionally while we're working on getting parents accessible, right? Making me think of a time I went in to the playroom with an 11-year-old. She'd been shut down for many years, had an injury inside, and we did a centre together. And she kind of found words for the first time about what was happening inside. And then after the centre, she was actually able to write down on a piece of paper some of her discoveries. And then once the parents were accessible, we took that paper into a session with them with a little girl, and then she actually shared what was on her paper with them because she felt like she could and they were available. Oh, that's a good point. We've got to do this in different ways, right? Different formats.
Yeah.
Family and what the child needs. Got to be flexible.
Yeah. Like I sometimes think like part of the therapy where our goal is creating kind of flexibility and openness in this family system. And it's so easy to come in as the therapist saying, nope, this is the way we have to do it. We have to meet with the whole family, and then we have to meet with mom and dad, and then we have to meet with the kids, and then we have to meet with the most distressed dyad, and we just have to stay with that dyad until we kind of are done. But like, we need to make adjustments depending on the family and kind of where they're at. And
it's a moving system that we're joining. So finishing off for today, though, let's finish our tango metaphor because I'm having fun with it. So, okay, we've got some ideas of the move two with a child using art and games. Then move three, how would you see the move three with kid and dad using something expressive?
So like with this expressive art, I think that really kind of lends itself to move three of just sharing that. Kind of initially kind of sharing that with a therapist if the parent isn't there in those sessions. And I've had kids that we've done some of this art, but they're like, the parents aren't ready to receive it. And so we kind of set it aside and down the road, we come back and then they might be several months later when they share kind of what they did.
It'd be like literally sharing a picture or in a practical example, maybe the kiddo, oh my gosh, what about the kid colors the cotton balls different colors, and then based on the feeling colors, and then brings the cotton balls to Dad and says, here's five blue ones. There's five hoods or something like that. And as a child, so they're talking about it, they're giving that visual representation to the parent too.
Yeah. But it's kind of, I've just kind of thought through this kind of, and there's other ways, but like that, the sharing of the art is the move three.
Yeah.
The enactment of like, now here's kind of, we've explored what's going on within me. Now I'm going to share it with my, my parent.
Right. And you could have the parent even in that response in the move four, like even use some of the TheraPlay activities and feed the kiddo or put lotion on their hands or paint their nails. Give them a comfort kit. Oh my gosh, I have this idea.
Put some Band-Aids on the owies.
Yes, Band-Aids on the owies, a bandage around the little visual of the broken arm with injury. And then move five, one could take this out, zoom it out into kind of a ritual. Right? That maybe in the future, if Dad's words fall in a criticizing way with son can go and put a cotton ball on Dad's pillow. Is a way to say, Daddy, I had an owie today. Or Dad can ask, right? Like, ask about it at nighttime. Like, maybe they have some cotton balls on the nightstand as a way to have a conversation.
Did I give you a red cotton ball there?
Yeah. Oh, that's really fun. Isn't this creative and fun? I mean, EFFT is so, it's hard to learn, but once you've got it, it's so incredibly versatile. We're working with attachment relationships. We're working with emotion. And now to bring in creativity with art and play, the world is your oyster. There's just so much that one can do. And we don't, and honestly, if we just each have like one or two activities, like you've got your ones that you go to often. I have my ones I go to. Like one just needs a handful of things.
Yeah. Like it's great to have like an entire sand tray room with all of the little toys, but that's a lot, and it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of space. But
true.
And there is value in doing some of that stuff. But a lot of the stuff, what we can do is just so simple that we don't need very much.
Ooh, you're saying that for the EFFT therapists out there, if you want to start working with young kids, you could even just have like a little Tupperware box with a couple fun things like cotton balls and straws to blow them and some Band-Aids and a little bit of lotion. Like you don't need a lot of
stuff. Some bubble solution,
a balloon to blow up and play around with.
Crepe paper. I actually have a 10 by 16 or 12 by 16 tote that has all of that stuff in it.
Is it?
And then I kind of dig through ahead of time of like what I think I might use.
You have some ideas in the back of your mind. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sometimes that'll be in the middle of a talk session. And I'm like, oh, and I like go rummage them and kind of pull something out and make it one activity in the middle.
Oh, Dennis, this is really fun. Just chatting with you about this, I'm feeling incredibly creative right now. I'm coming up with all kinds of fun ideas in my brain, and this is just a nice reminder of how fun it is to work with this model and to work with kids and families. Thank you for inspiring me today and our listeners too.
You're welcome.
Take good care.
You too.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.